The FBI defines hate crime as a, quote, criminal offense committed against a person, property, or society that is motivated in whole or in part by the offender's bias against a race, religion, disability, sexual orientation, ethnicity, or national origin. So how does Indiana law define hate crime, or bias crime as it's also known? That's an easy one. It doesn't. Indiana is one of just 5 states without a hate crime law that explicitly authorizes judges to consider bias as an aggravating factor during sentencing. And that's not likely to change anytime soon, thanks to a Senate committee's decision earlier this week not to call for a vote on such a measure. The bill's author and leaders of the Republican-controlled Senate said their caucus simply couldn't agree on the list of groups that should be protected. Hi, I'm John Chwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll examine the push to discourage criminal activity fueled by hate. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue startup NeuroVigor, renewing hope for people with chronic diseases like MS and Parkinson's by targeting neurotoxins, helping people, changing lives. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.
Utter the phrase hate crime and you're likely to get a strong reaction from just about anyone in earshot. The reaction, however, is by no means consistent. Supporters of hate crime provisions maintain that sentence enhancements are necessary to protect not only individuals who might be directly harmed, but also entire groups that might be intimidated. Now, opponents, on the other hand, argue that such measures run counter to our nation's founding principles, especially the notion that Americans are free to harbor and, in most cases, express any thoughts or opinions they desire, however odious. Is there any way in Indiana to reconcile these opposing views? Joining me to discuss the issue are Republican Senator John Ruckelshaus of Indianapolis, Democratic Senator Greg Taylor of Indianapolis, Alia Amin, Executive Director of the Muslim Alliance of Indiana, and Kurt Smith, President of the Indiana Family Institute. Thank you for joining me for what I'm guessing will be a lively discussion. Let me just start with a basic question. Back in the 90s, when these types of measures were coming up around the country and at the federal level, they were referred to as hate crimes. And in fact, I use that terminology here in the intro. But now, I'm always corrected, it's a bias-motivated crime. When did that change and why? Is it just kinder and gentler?
I think it's a kinder, gentler way to say that people have different opinions and... I think that any American, anyone who has an opinion, has the right to express that opinion. They just don't have the right to harm another person or their property in doing that. And I think that that's what this is about. I wish we nickname it or have a different name, hate crime activity, so that we could distinguish between the fact that we're not talking about thoughts here. We're talking about action. And when you take your thoughts and it leads to action to harm somebody else, we should be very concerned about that in the state of Indiana.
So I finally get accustomed, you know, I'm accustomed to saying it now with bias crimes, and you're going to change it back to, again, on me, too. What's your, you're saying active, hate active.
Activities.
All right. Well, let's look at the measure, Senate Bill 418, that basically is not going anywhere this particular session. And if you look back at the past 2 sessions when virtually the same legislation has been offered. Let's look 2 years ago, it made it through the Senate by a fairly comfortable margin. Last year, it made it through committee, through corrections and criminal law. Fast forward to 2018, doesn't even come out of committee. What's happening here?
Well, I think what happened in 2016 was a short session. It was one of those sessions. I was not there. I was elected in 2016, which had been in November. So it was one of those issues in a short session. There's not a lot of time to really vet issues. There was a lot of other issues that were going on at the time. We were coming off the bathroom issues. You remember that bill that was happening. So there was some sympathy there, and then it didn't get a hearing in the House. So then we came back in 2017, in a long session, and that's when people get a chance to really vet. And I think that's where we started the hang up with respect to the issue between urban and rural legislators about the language. And I think the list, and in particular the list, we try to look at many different avenues to try to appease and try to find compromise, both in 2017 and 2018. And at this point, we just couldn't find compromise with different variations of language for all sides.
You mentioned it's more urban versus rural, perhaps, than Republican versus Democrat. Right. And I guess evidence of that is that you and Senator Taylor have been on the hustings together advocating this measure, both represent Indianapolis. Is that what enables you both to come together on this particular issue, would you say? Is that?
I think what enables me to come together is I can't pass it without him. So let's just make that very clear.
His name's on there as author, and you've got some bills that I don't think you even got assigned, or maybe they got assigned but haven't gotten here.
Yeah, so when you're in the supermajority, I'm 9 votes, he's got 41. Of course, I need his help to get anything passed that does get passed the General Assembly. But what I think it's important is to understand that we are of different parties. And the fact that people from different parties can come together and recognize that we have a problem is important. Because as we see across the country, we don't have that going on in a lot of places. What's unfortunate is that reasonable minds in this matter didn't prevail. And unfortunately for Hoosiers in the state, it's another year without something to protect people.
Kurt Smith, you were active behind the scenes and even in front of the scenes, you might say. What do you take away from the fact that, 2 years ago it got this far and then it sort of came halfway and now it seems that it's basically stuck?
I think as legislators learn about it, they have concerns. It's not what the laudable goals that the authors of the bill here are trying to do. That's not what the bill would do. That's not what the legislation would accomplish. I hate crime. You hate crime. We all hate crime. This is a list. It becomes who's politically favored, and you go on the list or you don't. We proposed language that would have allowed judges to add enhancements, or rather aggravators, for any crime, for any motivation of animus or hatred, whether it's faith or race or religion or any characteristic. We all hate crime, and we want to see criminals severely punished and hopefully change their behavior.
Well, one of the other senators who, along with with Senator Ruckelhaus, was the author of the bill, Sue Glick, said she thought that the list that's on there is basically does cover everybody, that you may read sexual identity or gender identity or sexual orientation and think that somebody else, but we all
different.
Have, we all have
well,
those things,
point
don't
was
we?
Subtly different, that every characteristic on the list applies to all Hoosiers, and that's true, but the person testifying that she was rebutting, in her mind refuting, but I don't think it was successful, he was saying when you make a list, the court has to, as a principle of applying the law, give greater weight to the list. The legislature took the effort to say faith and religion and race and ethnicity, and so you leave out that you're a small business operator or that you're a property owner, that you're a farmer, or that you're something else. And so the court has to give greater weight to the list. That's all. And she was saying she was trying to rebut that.
And what are you most afraid of? What would happen here if this were enacted? I mean, give me your worst case
scenario.
Well, I don't
think it's a fear. I just think it's a misguided policy to start picking winners and losers in the criminal code. Let's have a blanket. Judges have the discretion to make the punishment fit the crime. When there's an especially odious motivation, add enhancements, whether it's faith. I don't think that a gay person who's assaulted on a public street deserves more justice than a Trump supporter. And this law would, if Senator Taylor's bill passed, add 5 years to this crime.
Ali, explain why you think that these types of lists of protected groups are, in fact, necessary. I mean, is it smart public policy? You just heard Kurt Smith say it's bad policy. It doesn't protect everybody.
Well, it actually does protect everybody, and although it is about action, it does send a message to Hoosiers that it's okay to commit a crime based on somebody's ethnicity, race, gender identity, sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. And these groups have been marginalized, and they do need those extra protections. And you spoke about, you said that small business owners should be protected. But they would be under one of these, excuse me, under one of these categories. And I don't see people going around attacking small businesses. If they're attacking small business, it's because they fall under one of those categories. So they would be protected under this law. So it's just sending a message to the greater community that we do not need, that we don't think it's important to protect these marginalized communities when, in fact, they do need protections.
If I could note, the key mm-hmm. to that argument is marginalized communities.
Yeah.
So the list is marginalized communities. And that's where we start saying, wait a minute, who's going to pick and choose?
But isn't that by definition the people who need protection? I mean, if you're...
Well,
there's not a big,
we believe in equal justice, and we think judges currently have the discretion but can have enhanced discretion to make the punishment fit the crime.
That term equal justice has always troubled me, because if you look at justice in this country, you will find that minorities inherently are sentenced to longer terms than a majority people who are convicted of the same crime. You know, equality is something that it's always troubled me to say that, because as you sit here today, you see that we're not all equal. Some of us have inherent characteristics that are different than each other. Not even twins are equal. They're not exactly the same. So when you say things to me like, I want to treat a small business owner or a Trump supporter like someone who has been discriminated against on their race, I just want to know what facts you need or where you come up with this issue that they've ever been troubled. Listen, there's no doubt that minorities, women, people of certain religion have had to fight in this country to get the same rights as others. The thing that glares at me right in the face is the fact that as we sit here today, there's only three people on this panel who have a right under the law to vote. Me and one of the other panelists, mm-hmm. It had to be an act of Congress for us to have a right to vote. And to even try to justify or to try to say that your right to vote is in the law, ours is an act of Congress, which means it can be taken away at any time by the act of Congress. So inherently in our laws, there's inequality.
Well,
so
it's in the U.S. Constitution. It can't be taken away.
Well, but yours is in the Constitution. Mine is in an act of Congress. 1965 Voting Rights Act is what gave me...
My comment is equal justice. We want the law to be blind to these kinds of circumstances.
Let me play devil's advocate. What about school vouchers? These were set up initially. Now they've been loosened, the requirements. But initially they were designed and eligible, or available, I should say, only to individuals who were in poor-performing schools. The idea was to give them a ticket out. So the law protected, and I think people, you were an advocate, I presume, of vouchers, but that protected a specific group of students who
We can make prudential judgments in public policy. We want people to discriminate between the lights. That's a green light. You can go forward in the traffic light. That's a red light. You have to stop. We can make prudential judgments. We want the law to be blind and equal.
But it wasn't blind in the case of vouchers, because everybody couldn't get them. Right?
Everyone who had those characteristics, regardless of race, religion, ethnicity, their geography, where they were.
But it was a subgroup, I guess, that you felt needed protection, I guess, is the point I'm making. Jump in here.
Well, I was just going to say, I think you just got full Exhibit A of what we deliberated within caucus and within the Republican Party and the Senate caucus.
Up until right before...
Right, up until the right hearing. That is exactly right. Clearly, the will is we want to protect everyone. But there were a lot of us that we're talking about. It wasn't a list per se. This is the reality of the world that we live in today. And we're not just saying that it's a list, and everyone is covered. I think Senator Glick did articulate it extremely well in that. But that's where we grounded it, and we couldn't come to a consensus on that.
There was an amendment we supported. It was authored by Attorney General Curtis Hill that we thought accomplished that. It was very well crafted and designed. I believe it was based on Pennsylvania. I may be wrong on
the
state.
Some people describe that as a poison pill,
Utah.
Though.
It was Utah. It would have covered everybody, including me and you wearing glasses.
Right.
And if you want to put that on the same level as somebody being attacked for being a Muslim or someone being attacked, I mean, I don't know. I could stop wearing glasses and wear my contacts.
I've criticized my share of judicial rulings, but we have to give the judge some latitude. That crime is, unfortunately, very fact-specific. It's got circumstances and context, and judges need to do the right thing.
Ali, how necessary is this? I mean, you represent an organization Muslims in this country who have experienced, by news accounts that I read,
yep.
different types of offensive behavior or hate motivated or bias motivated or whatever we're going to
activity.
Okay,
well,
here's
yes.
I'm going to get
that word.
I've got old habits. I mean, is it? People say, okay, I want common sense. Is this a problem? Are we just looking to solve something that doesn't exist? Is this a real problem?
It is a real problem.
What happens to them? Are they getting looks from people or the graffiti? What is the manifestation?
There have been mosques around Indianapolis that have been vandalized. The biggest one was Isna just last year, down in Plainfield. There was graffiti, and there people are afraid to go to the mosque now because they know that there are not those protections specifically for Muslims. And again, by saying, everyone's covered under this blanket law does not say we are protecting you because, as Senator Taylor said, historically, there are marginalized groups that do need protections that have not been recognized by judges, when they do go to court or they, the judges have not taken that into account, and they do need to. We need to say, it's not okay to do this, and by not doing that, we're saying, you're covered, you're fine, but we really don't care that we still have this culture of fear and hate that is
of course it is, but I mean graffiti yeah. and defacing yeah. private property or public
it's
still already
than,
illegal.
Than,
I mean why if these I don't know if these individuals were ever apprehended or charged. But well, I mean there are statutes. Yeah. Does that not accomplish?
It's more than that though. It's being attacked for who you are. It's not just the vandalism. There is a clear threat, underlying threat, that if you are a Muslim in America, it's okay to hate you and there has there just
isn't. But this wouldn't change that. It would be okay to hate you.
It would be okay. Yes, you're right. The thought would be okay, but people would think twice about acting on it. Right? Right now, there's not that protection that's there.
We have a case right now out of New Haven, Indiana. I think it's important. I had a family come down, a brave mother out of New Haven, Indiana, came down to talk about her son's situation. It was one of the most gripping pieces of testimony I've ever heard as a lawmaker here in Indiana. And what she talked about is the fact that her son was beaten unconscious. He was in the hospital for 2 days. There were three young men who did this, and one of them was charged. Now, though that charge was titled aggravated assault with racial undertones, okay? The Monday before the Tuesday hearing, this young man was sentenced to 30 days in juvenile detention. The crime carried a term from 0 to 90 days. And if you look at what we do as a legislature, we give an advisory sentence, which is typically in the middle. So let's say we start at 45. This judge actually mitigated the circumstances there and sent this young boy to 30 days. Now, that's a travesty.
So your complaint may be with the judge here or
no, it's no. with the it's the law. And here's the reason why. Because when you keep going to the law and asking the law to protect you, which is what the law is supposed to do. And you keep getting hit in the face every time, 30 days for beating my son unconscious. What's your next step? Do you take the law into your own hands? Do you move to another state, which his family's gonna do? Another example, Muslim woman gets beat in Bloomington mm-hmm. in front of her 9-year-old child while the young man is hollering, white power. He's beating her just because she's a Muslim. He gets probation. That's Indiana. That's Indiana law. And if it's the judge, then we understand that. Then we need to do something about it because judges obviously aren't taking this seriously.
No, because that's an ongoing debate on any number of criminal justice issues. Are the judges not aware that they... in theory, could enhance.
Yeah, I don't know these instances. Bloomington is the most tolerant and welcoming community in our state. Sometimes I would say to a fault, and
that's why we need this.
That statement is exactly why
protect,
we need this law.
To protect that woman.
Anything
in the
goes
most,
is not my idea of welcome. It's more of a chaos.
John, one thing I want to add is I look at this from a global perspective, and a couple things. I see society is moving faster than government in totality, and that's interesting in our society right now. Number two, I always like to look for the silver lining in anything. That's why I'm a Chicago Cubs fan. And one of the things that I see that's been very healthy on both sides of this debate is we have been able to raise a level of consciousness in the state about hate and how do we address with it in this state. Because one thing that we have not talked about is the 99.9% of Hoosiers are loving, who are loving and caring and take care of each other. We're talking about a very small amount.
Is it the language? I mean, is it the list that people find off-putting? For, again, the notion of...
It becomes, we politicize the criminal code, and then it's kind of a, every time the legislature's in session, we're having a debate about who's favored and who's not. I think we should avoid that, particularly in the criminal code, but generally as a matter of public policy.
So how do we address our opioid epidemic? How do we address the crime epidemic? How did we address the drug epidemic when it came to protecting our children? We put an enhancement on the book that says that if you sell drugs within 500 feet of a school, you get an enhancement. We also, last year, just we've had enhancements, for example, if you can get an enhancement for attacking someone if they're over 65. Where you can get an enhancement for attacking someone who's 14. And here goes the rub. The most egregious is if you point a firearm at a police officer, you could get 20 years. I didn't say pull the trigger. I said point a gun at a police officer, you get up to 20 years. And we're talking, my bill, quite frankly, where you destroy a person's life. This family I'm talking about, the older brother won't leave the house, and we can't get...
This is a mother who said, yes, I regret moving from Illinois, they do have statutes, 45 other states, although different types. I mean, you mentioned age. I was just looking at some of the numbers, you know, 28 states look at gender, 17 look at gender identity, 13 age, 3 homelessness, 5 even political affiliation. I mean, it's so when you say where you want to get, we need to catch up with everybody else, only 17 states, as far as the numbers I looked at, have transgender protection, for instance. So rather than playing catch up, would this not make Indiana in the vanguard, you might say, if it would be the 18th state? I mean, does it help by trying to parse this by how many states do this?
I don't think it's a useful argument, and I don't think a list is ever going to work. I think we need broad principles that the judicial system can apply to fact-specific
crimes. If they
crimes.
Apply them. I mean, and a lot of people have pointed out that they've referred to this Whitmer v. State from 2003.
Right.
But if you read that, and I have, Randall Shepard, who wrote the opinion, former Chief Justice, said that the list of enhancers is not exclusive. And so then he says, we can say without hesitation that racially motivated crimes are intolerable and may constitute an aggravating circumstance.
Right.
And that's racially motivated crimes.
And the courts have gone on to say...
Are people inferring, though, that that covers everything else?
Well, without hesitation. So he said, this is definitely the case here specifically, and the courts have gone on to say judges have that latitude. So,
But that hasn't been adjudicated at that level,
and
right?
And that hasn't been done in Indiana.
It's been applied in courtroom after courtroom after courtroom.
Do you even buy the notion that judges do have this? That do you buy that belief that Senator Long, President Pro Tem, said that everybody has a protection now without name?
That is correct. Yes, well, based upon that case, that is correct.
This is why I'm not a lawyer. Right. I didn't like my interpretation.
And I didn't go to law school either. But the point is, that was back in 2003. Again, that's why I made the comment, society is moving faster than government. Things are changing. So that's why we wanted to revisit it in totality.
If I could just be clear, I decry all the examples that have been shared here. They're all horrible and terrible. A woman being beat in front of her child. A woman being beat at all. A man from Illinois moves over here, a young man, and he's beaten in New Haven, Indiana. That is horrible. But to come up with a blunt tool from Indianapolis.
That you, I got to wrap up, but Ali, you've been outgunned by the talkers here. And the last final word, what are you prepared to do? We've seen, you know, Kurt's group and others that have mobilized certainly to thwart this passage. What is your group and what are other groups prepared to do, and if you could quickly, to make sure that the outcome's different next year or the year beyond?
Well, we are part of the Central Indiana Alliance Against Hate. And so as a part of that coalition, we are going to continue to get the grassroots movement going And, you know, next year, hopefully we'll have another bill and stand behind that.
And Muslim Day at the State House on
Muslim Day at the State House, February 22nd, 9 to 12:30. Join us.
Kurt will be there.
I will be there.
Perfect. Thank you.
The keynote speaker.
Well, speaking of being there, I appreciate all of you being here for a discussion that certainly has an impact on all Hoosiers, regardless of one's stance. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator John Ruckelhaus of Indianapolis, Democratic Senator Greg Taylor of Indianapolis, Alia Amin of Muslims Alliance of Indiana, and Kurt Smith of the Indiana Family Institute. The opioid crisis in Indiana, is it a medical issue, a law enforcement issue, a social issue, or all of the above? On the next Indiana Lawmakers. Time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, now part of Hanna News Service. Ed, I'm going to start with the same question I did over there about the process here. 2 years ago, gets through the Senate. Last year, gets through the committee. This year, no. I mean, bills usually sort of move forward incrementally, and this one, what do we read into the fact that it seems to be going backward?
Yeah, I wouldn't read too much into that, John. We're having some issues with some other related kinds of bills. You know, we saw that there was a great deal of impetus for some kind of civil rights bill a couple of years ago after the big
Religious Freedom Restoration Act debate.
And we thought that everything was paved for that to pass, and it didn't. We couldn't thread the needle on that one, and we can't thread the needle on this one. What is of some concern to a lot of people, though, is that these issues are getting decided in caucus because they can't get decided. You know, they're not even coming out for a floor vote. But I think that the next year you're going to see some turnover in the Senate. You already had the Speaker of the House, Brian Bosma, say that he was a little bit more amenable to such a hate crimes, bias crimes bill this year than he had been in the past. I think he probably would have seen it pass in the House. I'm not sure about the Senate. The problem in the Senate was that you just had too much splintering. You had some people who thought that the bill was fine as it was written, some people who thought that it didn't go far enough, some people that thought that it wasn't explicit enough for LGBT groups, some people who thought that it gave them too much protection. So there really wasn't even a for or against kind of consensus. It was really splintered, and everybody was everywhere on that.
Isn't every bill, though, sort of that? I mean, it's the, you know, you find the porridge is too hot, not hot enough, just right. But why is it that this bill, aside from some others, is being decided in caucus effectively?
It's a hot issue. This is an issue that, you know, not everybody wants to necessarily be on record on, especially if you've got a particular concern that makes it look like you're opposed to the overall concept, when in fact you're just opposed to a particular provision in there. You don't want it to look like that. Now, we had a situation on Wednesday in the House where it almost came up as an amendment, a floor amendment, thanks to Representative Justin Moad of Indianapolis, but it didn't have enough votes to pass the procedural threshold in order to be considered. But there was a lot of thought that this bill would have, or this amendment would have passed in the House as well.
All right, get your crystal ball. Last question. Will this be enacted, and if so, what year? What session?
I think you'll see it in 2019.
Okay, well then that's pretty specific. All right, Ed, we will hold you to that, and we will revisit the topic then. Thanks for being here. Appreciate your insights. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and my colleague Ed Feigenbaum, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House coverage. Until next week, take care.
Purdue startup NeuroVigor, renewing hope for people with chronic diseases like MS and Parkinson's by targeting neurotoxins, helping people, changing lives. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.